I will be brief, but if you visit voidsignal.net or patreon.com/voidsignal, you can help me create more of this thing that I do. Thank you so much for your consideration. You get hours and hours of content in exchange for your financial assistance. And if you are interested in sponsoring an episode of Void Signal, you can email me at brian@voidsignal.net. Thanks for your consideration. I hope you are well, and let's get on with it. Take care.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hooray.
Sweet mother of God. All right.
Yeah, sorry for the trouble. I have no idea what was going on with any of that. Usually doesn't happen.
I'm certain that at least 50% of it was me doing old man stuff. But
I mean, I didn't want to say that, but I'm glad you did. So it's how are you? It's so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time and for making this work.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. We'll just launch right into it if you are ready, if you don't need a second or anything.
Yeah, no, let's get into it.
Okay, cool. I guess the first question I have is, I know that you've got shows coming up, and that's exciting. You've got like Fixation coming up like imminently. Mm-hmm. I will see you and Mary at Mechanismus in June.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing you both there. But the thing I did want to ask you about is what's the future of Assemblage 23 beyond this? Like, you're playing some shows this year, but are you going to put this thing to bed, or can we expect more from you?
Yeah, it's funny timing, actually, because mm-hmm. I just put up a post yesterday mm-hmm. about this, and I have started work on the next Assemblage 23 album. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate that it'll be done this year.
Sure.
Because I don't have near as much time as I used to spend in the studio, so it's going to take a little bit longer. But I do plan to work on this album. Things have been quiet for a while because I was trying to do, we did the 20th anniversary edition of Failure.
Yeah.
And I was going to do one for Storm, because that was another kind of pivotal album for A23. Mm-hmm. And I just ran into the most bizarre technical mm-hmm. issues. There was this really obscure bug where if you had an Apple AIF sound file and you saved it to a drive that was formatted in FAT32, it erased the header information. Mm-hmm. So my option was to go back with each sound file, that makes up every song, and yeah. manually rewrite the header information. And it became clear. It's like, all right, this just isn't going to be worth the time.
Right.
So I gave it a shot and then decided, all right, I think it's more important to be working on new music.
Sure. Fair enough. Is there a possibility of us seeing, like, I mean, okay, so I'll volunteer this. This was another question I had, but since it came up, Defiance is like my personal favorite record. Will we ever see like a remaster of that, or are you just kind of done with trying to do any other remasters for the time being?
Unfortunately, it just wouldn't be possible because when I was living in Seattle right before I moved, I had a pipe burst. And a bunch of my old backups got destroyed. So I only have files for about half of that album.
Gotcha.
I definitely would have considered that one as well. But gotcha. I think I'm not getting any younger, and free time is a luxury that we, very few of us feel like we have enough of. So I think my time is better spent, getting started on something new.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm itching to do it too, because it's been a while since I've worked on new material. So it's one of those things where it's usually by the time when it's time for a new album, I'm ready. I'm really chomping at the bit to get started.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's been a couple of years since we had anything new from you. So that's exciting. Although you've been keeping busy with like doing Helix stuff, which has been fantastic. It's been Do you find it as gratifying to work on Helix as a Assembler 23, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's nice because I feel a little bit freer in it because it's still, compared to A23, at least it's the newer of the projects, and mm-hmm. you know, people get sort of preconceived notions and expectations, when you've been doing music for a while, and I feel like those expectations haven't formed yet, and mm-hmm. you know, one of our kind of philosophies with doing Helix is just like, we just want to use bits from whatever kind of styles of music that we like. So we just mm-hmm. kind of, I think sometimes it can be hard to pigeonhole the project as a whole because,
sure.
you know, there's songs that are more, trip hop or mm-hmm. trap oriented. There's more, you know, there's house or dance and like all these dub, different genres that are kind of thrown in there. So, mm-hmm. It's fun, and I feel like, you know, we can kind of do whatever we want musically, and of course having, you know, Mary doing the vocals and the lyrics, that takes off, takes me out of the equation for what's generally my least favorite part of working on A23 stuff. So it's great, and it's good to kind of shake things up and kind of work outside your pigeonhole for a little while and stretch yourself creatively. And that's only going to have influences on, mm-hmm. you know, the way the next A23 is, you know, even if it's in a very subtle way, you learn new techniques and new ways mm-hmm. of working.
Yeah. That was a thing I was actually intending to comment on, was that, like not only Helix stuff, but also sort of a lot of your more recent remixes have kind of got my attention again of like, oh yeah, Tom like is, you know, makes banging music and like knows what the hell he's doing with it and like makes good shit. But allowed to branch out a little bit. And that's the thing that I've been enjoying about Helix is that it is not Assembler 23, the formula, I guess. It's like sort of you're doing new things, experimenting with new things.
Yeah.
And it's great to sort of hear your style applied to those, if that makes sense.
Sure. And, you know, it's part of how Mary and I bonded was just in talking about kind of some of our mutual loves, musically. And mm-hmm. this is just kind of a chance for us to kind of pay tribute to that stuff in a way, you know, even if it's not obvious to anybody else, you know, a lot of the choices that we make and stuff like that are informed by, you know, stuff that we were listening to in the 90s and before that. So, it's great to have an option to kind of stretch out and do something outside your usual comfort zone.
Yeah, for sure. And we all stand to benefit from it. So, that's a good thing as well. Okay. So aside from, is there a possibility of, so just kind of those two things on the horizon, is there a possibility of a new, just you thing that you're doing on your own, or just going to kind of sit and see how these things go for now?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
No, sorry. That's fine. I'm like a stupid person sometimes. but
I'm not sure I understood the question.
Oh, no worries. Just so, are you going to like start any other projects, or are you just going to kind of keep your focus on Helix and Assembler 23 for the foreseeable future? Or is there another Tom Scheer project that you're like, maybe I'd like to try and do this thing by myself or something like that?
Yeah. I can never really predict what'll happen in the distant future, but I know that for now, it's a struggle just to get those two projects, sure. Material done for them.
Gotcha.
With the way that my schedule is these days, so I don't want to stretch myself too thin. But
sure.
you know, as time goes on, if more time frees up, or if I decide to retire a project or something like that, I just like making music, and I don't it doesn't have to even necessarily be within a specific genre. I just find it to be a really stimulating, you know, challenge to try and learn new things. So I'm certainly open to it, but time is not really cooperating in that regard.
Sure. Okay.
Those are good answers. So aside from your work doing music stuff, is there anything else like coming up this year that you're like excited about, or that in your, even if it's like a personal thing, I mean, I'm not trying to like dig into your personal life or anything, but like, what else do you have coming up this year that's like, oh, I can't wait to get to this thing or experience this?
Well, one of the shows that we have, coming up this summer, we're playing the Mariluna Festival in Germany, which we've played a few times before. Great, great festival.
That's huge.
But we managed. Oh, thank you. Thanks. But on our way there, we're going to play a show in Finland where we've never gone before, never performed before. And I'm really looking forward to that. It's always really exciting for me to get to visit a place that I've never been before. And
yeah,
you know, it's awesome to get to perform for people that haven't maybe had the chance to catch you live before. So
yeah,
I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Finland. That sounds fun. That's exciting.
We're big in the reindeer demographic, so it just makes sense.
Right, obviously. That makes sense. Yeah, huge. That's thrilling. That's exciting. And then, so of course, Fixation is coming up imminently. I've never been to that, and I would love to, but it's just like one of those things I haven't been able to catch as of yet. So you're kind of doing double duty on that, because it's not just Assemblage 23, it's Helix as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Helix and A23 are both playing. Gotcha. So this will be our first. I think it's only the second year that they've done it, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure.
We've worked with this promoter a lot, and we've played at this venue, Smalls, quite a bit. And there's really a sense of community to it. Like, the staff are great. You know, it's not the biggest venue in the world. So it's like, it's nice for more intimate shows that, right. You know, sometimes at festivals, it's like you have a great lineup, but like you just feel crowded out because the venue's too big, or there's just too many people there. But I think this should be a really good experience. And I think, you know, the staff there are kind of just indicative of Detroit in itself. Like, I love that, you know, the people in Detroit get such a bad rap, and, you know, I'm not saying that undeservedly, but the people who are there have such a fierce determination of, like, we're going to keep on going, we're going to keep on rebuilding, and I think it's really awesome. And it's also, you know, a city, of course, that's really musically important,
right?
Just with the techno and house scene in particular. But I find it really interesting how, if you listen to a lot of that old Detroit house, it sounds very mechanical. It sounds like machines. So you can almost, you know, picture it being influenced by the industries that used to boom there.
Motor City kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. That's the thing I don't think I've ever explored before, is like the old, like, sort of Detroit techno house sort of a scene. I guess it's a thing I didn't really know existed. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because like it's very punk rock in a sense, because, you know, most of these people were, you know, these young people of color who were living in poor neighborhoods, and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't afford tons of gear. They didn't have the money to spend on a lot of gear, so they would buy all the crap that nobody else wanted, and they would just use that to make music. And as a result, a lot of those instruments that were considered kind of throwaways, but because of how huge techno and house became, are now some of the most highly sought after instruments, you know, in existence, which is crazy. But it just goes to show you that it's not the tools so much as it is the person using the tools.
Right.
You know, somebody who's, you know, a real creative visionary can create something, you know, listenable and interesting to listen to with, you know, toys if they wanted to. So I think it's something that's, I certainly started out that way too, where, you know, I graduated from college with a ton of student debt and a really shitty paying job, and So I just used whatever I could afford to get, which was not much. And but it really teaches you to be creative and kind of think outside the box and how you can kind of do a lot with not a lot.
Yeah. That's smart. That's interesting. Now that you've had a chance to sort of grow from being, you know, making do with whatever you had and sort of a shitty job and such, you know, now that you've been at this for as long as you have been, do you have any sort of like, is there anything that like you reflect on that you're like, I wish I'd kind of known this sooner, or I wish I'd done this a little bit differently? Is there anything that you stands out?
You know, I think, you know, when I started doing this stuff, when I was first getting into like writing songs and making electronic music and recording and mixing and all that kind of stuff, it was before the internet was really a thing. You know, we take it for granted now that anything you want to learn to use, you can go on YouTube and there's like 300 videos that'll teach you how to do it. And so it was much harder to come by back then. So I feel like my progress was probably slower than it would have been if I had grown up, you know, 10 or 15 years later.
Sure.
But I, as a result, and because, you know, a lot of what was available to learn this stuff were like old textbooks and stuff like that. You know, a lot of times the information in them was even a little old school by the stuff that I was working with. But I think it's good to kind of learn the origins of things, you know, as well as learning the thing itself, like understanding the why and how these things came to be from, you know, the analog generation before everything switched over to being in the box and on computers. So I'm thankful I was able to figure anything else out at all, to be honest. So I can't say I really have any regrets. Like, you know, I mean, things turned out pretty well, but, you know, I think if there was an overall thing that I would go back to tell my old self, it would be like, don't worry so much. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to obsess over small things, you know, creatively or musically or sonically that, my energy was misplaced. You know, it was one of those things that would bug me, and that's the only person probably in the world who would listen to it and even notice.
Right.
And that's hard to let go of, you know, because your creative stuff represents you. It's kind of it is you in a way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if there's something that's imperfect about it or that you don't like, it really sticks out to you. But, yeah, I think that would be the one lesson I'd say. It's like, hey, don't stop overthinking stuff. Just have fun and learn. And more importantly, like, screw up. Like, make mistakes, because that's what's going to make you better. And that's what's going to teach you, you know, the kind of the fundamentals behind the scene, why they are the way they are. Sometimes by experiencing, you know, when something goes wrong, it helps kind of drive home. It's like, oh, okay, I get that now. That makes sense.
Yeah. Agree. And I mean, you know, not the same experience, but that is what I've sort of learned across my own journey, is just that, like, you know, we're going to be sweating our own mistakes a lot and looking at things a lot closer than others will. So yeah, I think a
absolutely
lot of that is,
and honestly, like, so much of that stuff, if I look back to it, I can't even remember what it was that I was obsessing over. So it, you know, it wasn't as important nearly as I thought it was.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's been true of a lot of experiences, I think, just for anybody who's like, sort of, it's part of growing up, is that, like, you realize I obsessed over a thing that actually didn't fucking matter. It made zero difference in the long run.
For sure. That's a recurring theme.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. That's a good answer. all right. So what are you doing aside from music? What's the Tom Shear day to day? What's your, like, what are you doing with your life?
During the pandemic, started to make the transition from just doing music full time to going back to working a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of sort of online certification programs that were offering free or discounted things to kind of take advantage of the fact that everybody was stuck at home with nothing to do. And I got my my CompTIA certification, and I'm currently working in IT at Harvard Business School. And it's a great place to work. The commute absolutely sucks. And it makes it, that's one of the things that really makes it you know, it is making challenging for doing the creative stuff, is sometimes you just come home and you're just so wiped out from being stuck in traffic that you know, you can't use, feel like you can't use your brain at all. But and you know, I like spending time with my wife and my stepdaughter, and aside from that, I like I'm a video gamer. I'm not crazy about it, not like obsessive about it, but it's one of the things that I enjoy doing. Watching movies, I'm pretty boring at this stage.
No, that's I mean, that's
okay. You know, it's funny. I think in some ways, you know, being a tour musician, being a touring musician, turned me into a more boring person, because you know, you get those, you get about all the excitement that you can handle, you know, compressed into these short periods of time when you're out doing strings of shows or tours. So when you get back, you just want to, like, I just want to have a normal night's sleep and quiet where I'm not, like, have to be around, you know, 100 people or whatever. So I think in some ways it's made me more boring, because I get my fill of that when we get to go out on the road.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I, you know, people get tired. You don't want to keep doing, you know, being around people, and nonetheless, like, on a tour and stuff, like, you're on active brain stuff, like, and that shit's exhausting. Same with driving, you know.
Like, it's it's real hard to sustain. And just being, you know, even people that you get along with fantastically, like, you ride with that person in a van for 6.5 weeks, and I don't care who you are, you're gonna get sick of being in the van with those that group of people, and it's just human nature. So it's I know, like, larger acts that do more extensive tours, you know, are a bit more in the lap of luxury when it comes to touring. But even that, I don't know how you maintain your mental health. You know, some of these giant pop acts who are out, you know, for, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year, that just is an insane way to live to me. Yeah,
that seems crazy.
Touring is like such an, and it's like touring is just such an unreality kind of thing. Like, how do you go back to just day-to-day life after being in that state for almost a year?
I have heard that that Mary Catman is just insufferable to tour with. Is that... Is there any truth?
She's real difficult.
Yeah, I've heard that.
No, it's been great that to get to, you know, go and do shows with my wife is awesome, because you know, you always miss your family when you're away, but also just to get to see her perform and and get to see the audience's reaction is really awesome, because that's one of the things that, you know, bands that, it's not practical for everybody to perform live, but you know, one of the things you definitely miss out on is the immediacy of performing something and seeing an audience react to it.
Right.
Is something you just can't get from just releasing music, you know, as audio. And, you know, it might not even be something that everybody wants or would enjoy, but it is, it is an experience unlike any other aspect of music making. And, you know, that can go both ways. Like, you know, of course, you know, you have those moments where it's like everything is just kind of aligned and the audience is down for what you're putting out there and, like, they're reacting and it's great. But, you know, we played some ill-advised pairings before, where we opened for Fixmer McCarthy once in Germany. And they were both very nice, but the audience, we go out on stage and there's like 2,000 pissed off looking Germans all in Knights or M t-shirts. This is not going to go good. And it didn't. But you know, it's good. It's good to have those moments to just, you know, to teach you humility.
Yeah.
But they also make pretty funny stories in the end. Mm-hmm. There was an older like punk couple that were in the front row. And they were dancing their butts off. I don't know if they knew who we were or if they were just, you know, having a good time or whatever, but they were the only people who were not actively just sending hate rays with their eyes at us. So I just focused on them, and that's...
I mean, those...
we got through it.
Yeah, those people had a great time, at least. That does sort of prompt me to ask this question, though. So that just occurred to me. So you are sort of in the unique situation of, like, I don't know. I guess I would call Assembles 23 a legacy act, I guess. I mean, like, not to, like, make you feel fucking old or anything. But you know, I mean, I guess it would kind of count as that. But you have that experience of, like, oh, I'm, you know, I've been doing this for a while and people generally know who you are. And also, I started a new project with a woman at the front. So in a modern day, in a streaming digital platform sort of a world, those two experiences, mm-hmm. between like starting Assemblers 23 back in the day versus starting Helix now, is there anything, I guess, sort of comparing those two experiences, or is there anything about the newer experience that you hate or like, or what are your thoughts on that, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different experience because there's about a 20-year gap between, sure. the founding of each project. And it's not just that 20-year gap. It's that a fuck of a lot happened in that 20 years in the, sure. music industry. Like, it's unrecognizable from where it was in, like, the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you know, spreads out to how people consume music. You know, people, mm-hmm. don't go to record stores and buy physical media anymore. In fact, they don't usually buy much of anything. They're streaming, and the way that you have to promote yourself is as a consequence of that is much different. And the, you know, back in the day, you would have a promotions person who, mm-hmm. would take care of promoting your album, and you could focus on the music. But now, with the way that things are evolving, it's more and more of the responsibility is just falling on the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And the ironic part of that is at a time where most artists are seeing less and less pay for their work.
Sure.
So, you know, you're kind of expected to know how to, you know, put together a good looking video and run a social media campaign. And it's, Mary and I talk about this a lot, actually.
Sure.
Just in the sense of, you know, I do music as an escape from doing stuff that I don't enjoy. And so much of the way that things have shifted to how you have to promote yourself. And I'm not saying that I necessarily even do those things. I'm not probably, sure. promoting us the best way that I could. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, at what point does it become just a day job, you know,
yeah.
where it's like, God, I spend a quarter of my time making music and three quarters of the time getting somebody to try and give a shit about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an exhausting way to go about it. And it's, you know, it's tough to, I see all these new bands that are popping up and are out on the road. And all I can think is just like, man, good luck. 'Cause it's, mm-hmm. really, it's tough. You know, like, it's not just that you have to have a new set of skills in terms of getting noticed and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the bar for releasing music has been lowered so much. Anybody can get something on Spotify now,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the tune of, I think I read somewhere that there's about 100,000 songs a day get uploaded to Spotify.
Wow.
How do you get found in that if you're starting from zero? Like, you know, if you don't have the advantage of, say, you know, opening on a tour for a well-established band that you might appeal to the fans of,
mm-hmm.
how do you fight that? You know,
yeah.
it's there's always been a degree of luck to it, but I feel like it's becoming like playing the lottery in a lot of senses. And I think that it's while it's a great thing, this democratization of music and making it so anybody can make music at home and get it released, the flip side of that is everybody's doing that. Right. And as a result, the chance that somebody who doesn't know who you are is going to discover your music goes down exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a big change in itself. Just, I mean, yeah. That's kind of an all-encompassing change. And it, you know, it's I can't imagine where it'll be 20 years from now. I think like, you know, we're on the dawn of something else because of the emergence of AI, and you know, that's working its way into you know, plugins that musicians use. But you know, my worry is that so much of it is going to become, you know, younger generations are going to use AI to kind of curate their music rather than creating it from scratch, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, you know, using prompts and stuff like that to create music that you didn't really create other than you came up with the prompt.
Yeah.
That caused the AI to create it. And I just don't, you know, I mean, it's going to touch everything, because it's also going to work its way into band promotion and how bands are paid. And so it'll be interesting to see. I shudder kind of to think where it's going to be in 20 years, because, you know, things have seldom really ever gotten better in the music industry without there being, you know, another side to it.
Sure.
I always liken it to, there's an old saying about Russian history.
Yeah.
That's and then it got worse.
Yeah.
That's the phrase. And I feel like the same thing is kind of true of music, the music industry. I think it's become a much more difficult place. And although the door is ostensibly open to, you know, just some schmo in his bedroom, the reality of that ever being heard is pretty small. So
sure. And I mean, you say 20 years for like, what's it going to look like in 20 years? And I like, yeah, I have no idea, but I also feel like it's so fast that like, even just saying, oh, in 4 years or 5 years, what is it going to look like?
That's an excellent
point. Who fucking knows?
I think that we're, you know, the progress of technology seems to be accelerating in a lot of ways. And yeah, I think you're right. I think my time frame was, I mean, of course, yeah, 20 years will be unimaginable, but probably so will 5 years if we're being honest about it. And it's, you know, hats off to anybody who navigates it successfully. It's always been a difficult thing, but I just feel like, I feel like the potential is there for great things. You know,
sure.
you can reach people all over the world, but the practicalities behind it are a lot more restrictive and in some ways detrimental.
Right.
We'll see what happens. You know, I'm glad that I got started when I did, because I think it was a bit easier at that time to get a foothold. And I don't know how these up and coming bands get that foothold when there's, you know, 10,000 other bands vying for that same audience.
Yeah.
It's really cutthroat.
Exactly. And it's like you said, it's like you can get your music in front of millions of people, but can you? You know what I mean? Like it's you know, maybe fucking who knows. But you, that is something that I did want to just touch on really quickly, is that you did mention the early days of the internet. And before I put the last question in the podcast to you, I wanted to at least mention this anecdote. I've told it to you before, but I just, for the benefit of listeners, I messaged you on America Online like a, like 28 something years ago, like a long fucking time. And you, it was a long time, and you were very patient and very polite with me, asking like stupid ass questions about like song lyrics or something. But I just wanted to add that, like, you know, I'm glad that was my experience then, and not like, oh, I remember Tom Scheer, he was a dick to me when I was 14 or whatever. Yeah, thanks for always like being cool to you know, people and fans and stuff reaching out to you even almost 30 years ago. So thanks for that.
Well, I thank you. That means a lot. I try. I have my moments like everybody, I'm sure. But it's kind of counterintuitive to what anybody will tell you. But I'll tell you that, you know, being, you know, making the effort to be nice to your fans and to have time for them, mm-hmm. and to be easy to work with from promoters, it really can carry you a long way. Like, people remember those things, and mm-hmm. And they remember it when it's the other way around too. Sometimes probably more so when they have a bad experience. But I always still, you know, even after doing this for, you know, 20 something years, I still feel like I'm a music fan first, mm-hmm. and a musician second. So I always have kind of thought of that from that. I'm always, you know, we've had over the years opportunities to, you know, meet bands that were influential, to us when, certainly for me in my formative years. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit that I always, walk into those experiences with a bit of trepidation, because I'm like, oh man, what if they turn out to be an asshole? You know, yeah. It's like, that's such a bummer, mm-hmm. when you meet somebody that you really like, and you're like, oh wow, this guy's a real dick. You know, and it's, yeah. For me, it's very, I'm not one of those people that can separate the art from the artist. They're kind of intertwined for me. So
same.
That said, for the most part, my experiences have been very positive and good in that regard, but mm-hmm. pays to be nice.
It certainly does. And I will, as much as I want to ask pointed questions and about, you know, I love talking shit, I will confess. I just like, I don't know. I like sharing, like, this person did this shitty thing. So, and like you, I can't separate art from artist. I feel like what you make is part of who you are. So, like, if I know you are shitty, whenever I hear your music, all I'm doing is thinking about how shitty you are.
Sure. And the other thing that goes back to what we were talking about with, mm-hmm. just the competitive atmosphere of it is, like, if you are, you know, X person and you're an asshole or whatever, there's 10 other bands that are probably doing something similar to what you're doing who aren't, that could, yeah. that could deserve you, you know, use the support. Like, I feel like life is too short to, you know, kind of compromise your ideals for, someone just because they write a good song. You know, it's, mm-hmm. unfortunately a thing of just, you know, going back through music history as long as we have them, a lot of these people who were real genius artists were complete failures as human beings.
Yeah.
But we live in an age where I think we can give our support to people that we feel good about.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. With that said, I will, and I wholeheartedly agree, but I will add the last question of the podcast, somewhat related, because you mentioned that you were kind of a music fan first, right? And a lot of the people in this genre, especially, I feel like are, like, we all are here because we love it so fucking much. But so two parts of the question, I always ask what's something that you're enjoying recently, and I always, you know, your answer can be anything, obviously, but people tend to, that come on this show tend to like be like, oh, here's a personal thing I'm enjoying, but also this music. So, is there anything you've been listening to lately that has just like stood out to you and like, oh, I can't get enough of this thing?
I'll admit I don't get quite as much time to listen to music as I used to, but, sure. Obviously, I think the stuff that Mary's been putting out, these singles have just been phenomenal. And I'm biased with that, but I legitimately think that she's doing something that I'm not really hearing anybody else doing.
Agreed.
And I think it's really well done. So check out that Mary Chapman stuff if you haven't already, especially if you like Helix, because it's the same singer. Another artist that kind of came out of nowhere that I've really enjoyed is Rain,
yes.
Sweden,
mm-hmm.
R-E-I-N, another female artist. And it's a really interesting fusion of kind of old school electro-industrial. Like, it kind of reminds me a little bit. This is going to be a deep cut for most of your listeners, probably. Mm. But there was an old network band called, or Third Mind band called Prayer Tower. And the music kind of reminds me a little bit of that album. But also, it kind of mixes it with some pop sensibilities. And the cool thing that I found about her music is that she sounds kind of equally comfortable in both spots, where she's just kind of singing a pop song. It sounds natural. And when she's doing the more aggressive stuff, it sounds great. Like, I don't know what's going on in Sweden. Like, I just feel like there's something in the water that spawns a lot of great. Another one of it, I guess I can't say it's totally recent, but Wolf Band is another band out of Sweden that I think is just really, really phenomenal. It's kind of like, you know, if punk were done with electronics, but like, you know, real punk, not like cyberpunk. Yeah. It's got that same energy. But gotcha.
Those are good choices that I've not heard of, so I will follow up, because I've been
listening.
Oh, you
never heard
to...
Wolf Band?
No.
Oh man, I'll have to send you a couple tracks. They are so much fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I listen to a lot of Swedish artists as well. I've been like really hooked on Processor, and like Processor did like my theme song and stuff, and like but I've just been so hooked on it because it was, like you said, like there's something in the water about like, man, all these like great songs are being produced by people in Sweden. Like, what is the secret? But yeah, it's pretty,
it's crazy.
Incredible. And yeah, Rain has been great. And I do quite like that Mary Catman. I do agree with you. She's certainly doing something that is different. Oh man, that Fever Shake song is such a banger. Love that one in particular.
I've been lucky to get to hear she's working on a full-length album now, and I've been lucky enough to get to kind of be present for the birth of those songs and hearing how they're developing. And man, it's I really feel like she's just going from strength to strength at this point. Like, it's the songs are all like scarily well done, so
yeah.
That's something that people can look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool to me when you can sort of, you can find an artist and sort of see their progress of like, oh, from this EP or this single to like this newer one. It's like, okay, this person has sort of found their footing, maybe, or so how it seems. Like, it makes me excited for what they make next, kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then it's like, just, you know, each release you learn something new, and you build that skill set. And, you know, the wider the skill set that you've got to use, the more creative, you know, ways you can use it. And
sure.
I really watching her growth as an artist has been awesome to see firsthand.
Mm. Agreed. And I haven't even been paying attention as long as you have. So, okay, so last question, just what is something else that you're enjoying right now? Just something in your life that you're just like jazzed about when you wake up?
Mary and I, we're a little bit late to it, so but Mary and I just started the most recent season of True Detective with Jodie Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea what the hell's going on, but I am so on board for it. It's been excellent.
Gotcha.
And, we've been big fans of, the Fargo television series.
Mm.
I don't know if you've had a chance to see that, but,
I have not.
The movie is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I was very skeptical and kind of gatekeepy about it when I heard they were going to make it into a television show, but it's so good, and they really capture the feel of the film, and all the stories are like equally compelling. You know, most of them are stories of just something that goes horribly wrong and just spirals outward from there.
Yeah.
So those are two things that we've been enjoying a lot when we just kind of been kicking back and relaxing.
Nice. Those are good answers. I have heard that as well from others, that like that new True Detective season was like pretty slick and pretty worth checking out. I was very enamored with the first one, and then just sort of
first one was great.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I heard the second one was pretty good, and the third one was they kind of lost their way a little bit, but I am on board after just starting it. I'm definitely enjoying it so far.
Nice. I was just answer the question myself as well. The thing I've been enjoying recently is I just recently moved from Reno to Sacramento, and I love Reno. Like being able to go up to the lake and everything is great, but it is a little bit of an oasis as far as like tours and culture and shows and that kind of a thing.
Yeah,
because it's just out of the way.
There's that clown casino.
Yeah, there's the clown. Yeah,
there's that clown casino too. That's a
yeah, this circus. There you go. That's what it is. Yeah, but moving from Reno to Sacramento to like be able to make it to shows in the past week. Last weekend I caught I Speak Machine and Sign and Bestial Mouths and King Joseph and Health and Nightclub and Rose Garden Funeral Party. Like it has been a busy week down here, and it's been,
man, that's nuts.
Yeah, it's been so nice, like to be like closer to like stuff that's going on, and like a tour, and like,
for sure,
it's a nice change compared to Reno's like sort of like we got a tour in a couple months that I can go see, or you know, whatever. Like, right. Just I'm happy to be sort of closer to a beating pulse of a thing. Is how it feels. So that's what I've been like all
for
about
sure
recently. All right. Well,
congratulations. That sounds like a positive move.
Thank you. It has been great. And I know that I will, and I'm going to be at Dark Force Fest in a couple of weeks here. So I know I will miss you guys because like fixation's going on like right at the same time or close to. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you and Mary at Mechanismus in June. I'm excited about
absolutely
that. Mechanismus is a fantastic festival, and I can't wait to go back to Seattle.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time for sure.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. I will let you go. And you'll see when this goes up in a few weeks. I'll annoy you with it and everything. So, but yeah, thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah, let me know. I'll promote it and share it on my socials.
Cool. Thank you so much. And
say.
Yeah. You know, give my regards to Mary and everything as well. And thank you so much. Enjoy. Void Signal intro and outro music courtesy of Processor. Visit processor2.bandcamp.com for more Processor. And visit voidsignal.net to help support the creation of more Void Signal. Thank you.